Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it.
Hey, good morning, Zach.
Hey, buddy.
So, when we were talking about today's topic, when you brought it up to me, and I was looking through it and thinking through it, I was trying to think of some clear examples of when I've experienced this topic. And then I was like, you know what? Maybe a better way would be to talk about some clear areas that are the opposite. And I was reminded of a funny story that my brother tells. You know, my brother was in Navy Special Warfare. He was a SWIC. And so he's got some funny stories from his days with his team. And he always talks about these situations, you know, these guys are dealing with like live explosives and, you know, live rounds in their training. And they've got to do a lot of safety checks. They're jumping out of planes, parachutes and things like that. And he always tells a story about one of his teammates who was just too nonchalant when he was doing his checks. Like, so they all had their certain responsibilities. And he'll tell this funny story where there was some critical situation, you know, literally life or death, probably for a dozen guys. And they're right about to start the exercise. And they check with this guy. Did you do X, Y, and Z? Did you do your part? And it's too late. They have to go right now. Whatever situation is, it's too late to turn back. And the guy was like, oh, it's probably fine. So Justin's like, so the whole team had to go on. It's probably fine.
Ooh.
So that's a clear wisdom, or that's a clear instance of a lack of this, a lack of wisdom, right? I'm trying to think of some other examples where you have a lack of wisdom. And I think wisdom, one of the things that I kept coming over again and again as I was reading about wisdom this morning is like it can be, it's not always, but it can be born from experience. And so I think about, you know, kids and the things that they do just to take care of a situation and make it go away. And they don't realize that just because they have a lack of experience, that it's not going to work. It's the old classic, right? Like sweeping it under the rug.
Or wiping the boogers on the wall.
Or whatever it is. It's just take care of my problem now. Just whatever I have to do to not deal with it now, right? Like I remember one time I was talking to Marin and it's like, hey, this room is filthy. You got to clean your room. So, of course, come back and it's all clean. And I'm like, what did you do? And she takes me over to her closet. She threw everything in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, obvious. I thought that these were really good examples of, you know, opposite situations of things to do from when you acquire experience and when you acquire wisdom.
Wisdom. Wisdom is the word of the day. Is there a definition you found that you like?
I found a couple. The first one that I thought was decent was the quality of having experience, knowledge, and good judgment, the quality of being wise. I don't like it when it uses its own.
Yeah.
So I looked for another, and it said, the integration of knowledge, experience, and deep understanding, as well as a tolerance for the uncertainties of life. There's an awareness of how things play out over time, and it confers a sense of balance.
Hmm.
Long, but here's the thing. The one thing that I agreed with when I was reading this right after that definition was you know it has a sense of you know it when you see it, you know it when you experience it.
Yeah, that's what a dorky academic would call an operationalization definition. How do you know it when you see it? How do you measure it? It's like what the Supreme Court justice said about pornography. We can't define it, but we know it when we see it.
Right.
And I think that's a good way to talk about it. And wisdom often feels that way because it's almost like talking about spirituality. And I think an easier way to begin to grasp your mind around wisdom for us to talk about it is to think about seeking it out. Think about the people that you believe have this quality. How do they have it? And for me, it's one thing, and kids can't do this because they're too young. So we could say they haven't had experience or just time to be reflective. But when I hear wisdom, I think two things. One, I do not believe you can be wise, whether in the Western world or the Eastern world, without knowing thyself. You must know thyself. And so the second piece is living consistently with your principles. For me, if a person is not wise, if they have all the knowledge, but they don't live according to that knowledge, and the consistency is the key piece. That's the hardest thing to do, is consistently live within the boundaries that you believe are meaningful and important and valuable to you, and then hopefully share that stuff with others. Like in your brother's situation, he should have done those checks, and he wasn't living with wisdom in that moment, even though he should have been, because he was trained to do so. I love the concept of wisdom, but I feel it's unfortunate that a lot of people that we turn to in positions of power and authority who we think should have wisdom, I personally believe do not actually have it. They don't live the way in their personal lives that they often are preaching in their professional life.
Well, that's the toughest part about, I think, about wisdom, is it's such an all-encompassing thing. I like what you talked about living within your values. I think that's a huge part of wisdom. I think wisdom actually might be that plus more. And that's the craziest thing, is trying to define what it is, right? I mean, a lot of people will conflate wisdom with intelligence, but and while there might be a cognitive component like knowledge and experience, there's also, you know, reflective components. You have to be able to look back and digest the experiences that you've had, and like you said, put them into your values framework, and build your wisdom skill set, so to speak, with many principles. I mean, when I think about, you know, we're into stoicism, and we do a daily stoicism journal, and we read about it all the time. There's nothing in there that doesn't fall under wisdom.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point. The Stoic approach to life is a wisdom-based approach. And to me, you can't have wisdom without action. That's why I don't think there's much wisdom in academia. You can have all this knowledge, and if you're not doing something with it, to me, that's not wisdom. It's consistent application of knowledge, consistent over time. A wise person will do the same things because they believe that that's right. So, and I don't believe you have to have advanced degrees or intelligence, cognitive abilities to have wisdom.
I think you're right. And what I would say is, I don't think, like, if someone was listening to this and being like, oh, that means I have to go out and take action and display wisdom. I don't think that's the case. I think knowing when to act, knowing when not to act, it will be forced upon you. Life forces decisions upon you, you know, and you're always making decisions. It's funny. My parents have a hard time, and I inherited making decisions. And I always I've internalized that, and I try to, you know, hold a mirror up to them every once in a while and say, look, if you're not going to make a decision on this, that is a decision. Kicking the can down the road is a decision. And I think what you're talking about with folks who are in power, right? So political people not showing wisdom, but they can make all these excuses. You can slice wisdom up into 100 pieces of different pie, and they can pick any one piece of that pie and say, yeah, but I'm doing it because of this, right? And that doesn't matter, right? They're not hitting the other 99 or 98 pieces of pie.
Wisdom don't get you elected in politics.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And if you think about, What do you envision when you think of a wise person?
I envision Charlie Conrad. He's the greatest teacher I ever had. So when I said there's not wisdom in academia, that was a sweeping generalization. Let me clarify what I meant. In the academic world, you have a lot of people who, in theory, should be searching out knowledge, creating new knowledge. They're not just in the business of understanding, categorizing, critiquing, synthesizing knowledge. They're in the business of building new knowledge from discoveries and theorizing about it, and that can be exciting. The problem is when they do all of that in the little bubble and don't take it out into the world to test it out with people that actually do things. So we had a colleague pass away a few years ago at SIUE when I was teaching there. And we were kind of scrambling because I didn't know him very well because I was new. But people were tore up. They knew this guy for like 25 years. He taught there and was a really wonderful teacher. Students loved him. And they were kind of, in my opinion, and my colleagues were, you know, they were grieving and they were kind of the hamster in the wheel trying to figure out, well, what do we do? How do we memorialize him and all this stuff? Who was on our faculty? One of my peers that I loved and I still love to this day. I won't say her name. She is a world-renowned scholar on the grieving process. She's a world-renowned scholar on folks communicating with people who have passed on, the deceased, and what that communication's like and the meanings there. Do you know how many times the group of scholars turned to her to be like, what do we do? Like, fucking zero, man. And this is my critique. Like, we that would be like us getting in a huge conflict and them not turning to me and be like, hey, help us walk through this, mediator. That's my problem. That's a lack of collective wisdom to turn to the person who in theory has all this knowledge and they didn't even ask her. And I had a private conversation with her and was like, don't you feel that this is odd that they didn't ask you? Or like, she's like, yeah, it's really weird. That is my critique against academia as a whole in a specific example.
I see that lack of action there, right?
Yeah. But when you said earlier, you were like, go out and seek wisdom. You were just speaking off the cuff. To me, it's about you got to just seek experience. And then you had said you've got to be reflective about the experience. That's where wisdom comes from, is the reflection on the things you experience, the scars you get, the mistakes you make, the failures you bump into. If you can pause your ego through those experiences to extract lessons and then actually start living by those lessons or helping others live by those lessons, that's wisdom.
You just hit the next two big points that I was going to try to talk to.
And, oh, sorry.
And no, it's important. They're important. And I just want to, because you hit them like in the same block of couple sentences. And that is, number one, difficult experiences have the potential for growth, but they don't automatically translate into wisdom.
Right.
You have to do exactly what you talked about, that reflection piece. But number two, there is a necessity to decenter yourself, to get over your ego, to get to wisdom. That might be one of the things where we talk about the powerful people and the problems that they make. their lack of wisdom, they're always putting themselves at the center of it. And they're always justifying their actions and say, giving some sort of a virtue signal. But, well, I was just trying to be X, Y, and Z.
But Dave, they're public servants.
Right. Sure they are. Sure they are. And in doing so, you know, I would say that's probably a red flag to you. If you ever find yourself justifying your actions, that's a red flag, right? That is a red flag of a lack of wisdom, right? Like, to me, it is.
Because a synonym for that is rationalization. Excuse is a story we sell ourselves on.
Right.
You mentioned a thing. The word that sticks out to me in that is people who are wise are naturally humble. Why? That doesn't mean they think less of themselves. It means they think of themselves less. And that's a huge difference.
Oh, that's huge.
It comes out of AA. There's so many great sayings out of AA. A wise person, why are they wise? Because when you come to them for advice, they're not going to give you the advice that they think is correct. They're going to look at you, try to meet you where you're at, and probably say something like, well, you know, if I was in your shoes, here's how I'd look at it. And then let you make that's what wisdom is. It's just like, here are the 10 steps you must take. That's not wisdom. That's programming. That's prescription. That's a huge difference. Wisdom is saying, here are some general guidelines and thoughts. Here's what I've experienced. Here's what I might do in your situation. Here are the ingredients, man. Go make a recipe.
100%. It's the platinum rule versus the golden rule.
Yep.
So the golden rule, just a refresher. Golden rule is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Platinum rule is do unto others as they would have you do unto them.
The golden rule is wonderful as a general human ethic, but it's me-centered. Do unto others as I want. Platinum, do unto others as they need.
And that is so hard to achieve.
So the platinum people that practice the platinum rule, I'm stealing your thunder here.
Yeah.
They have wisdom.
100% they have wisdom. You know, there was another the perfect example of what you just talked about, thinking of yourself less. In order to think of yourself less, I think that know thyself piece has to come into the equation. Because for me, at least, ego acts on its own. And I have to recognize it and rein it in. So a perfect example was I was having a conversation with Lauren, and this just happened yesterday. And she was having a difficult situation. She had a disappointment, and I was talking with her about it. And I started giving her advice, like, "Well, maybe you should try this." And I caught myself. It was too late. I had already made the mistake, but I at least caught myself.
Dun dun
dun. Well, I did. I caught myself. At least I thought about what I just did and what I just said, and I went back and I said, "Hey, I'm sorry that I suggested that you do something in that situation. I should have just listened." And that's a weakness of mine.
Did she appreciate that apology?
She did. Less than if I just wouldn't have said it in the first – less than if I just would have shut my mouth and listened to her in the first place.
Right.
But I tried to at least recognize – from whether she did or didn't, I was internalizing it to myself that at least I caught myself and –
baby steps.
I keep reverting to the mean. That's the thing that's tough about – so let's talk about that with wisdom. Is wisdom something you just get and then you're good to go? You know, I don't think so.
No, that's why the word consistent application. You've got to create – because we're all hardwired in different ways. So we have to, first of all, know thyself, gain self-awareness, gain the ability to be self-critical. And from that, you will then get the ability to have self-determination. But none of that comes without self-awareness. And you're never going to re-hardwire yourself. So like – you're never just going to be a great listener, but you need to be aware of that and give yourself what I would call mechanisms, or Marshall Goldsmith, the coach, would call metrics, personal tools that you can use to shore up that gap. Mine is patience, my impatience. So I'm constantly doing these little things to try to improve it, open that I can get better. I'll never be perfect, but that's okay. So consistent application and consistent progress rather than perfection.
That's right. It's a practice. It is like going to the gym. It's like a maintenance activity.
Yes, that's wisdom. Wisdom isn't sexy. It's consistent application. I get more wisdom from a one-hour AA meeting in a dingy basement of a church sitting in folding metal chairs than I do in 20 hours of talking to other consultants or academics or experts. Because it's people talking about real shit, man, real experiences, scars and mistakes and the reflections and the lessons learned and trying to make each other better and consistently stay on this path. And the only singularity in that situation is the desire to stay sober and help others do the same.
You know what I think is a difference there? So as you were saying that, I was like, well, what's different about those situations? What do you think about this? Here's my hypothesis. In the situation where you're at in AA, it doesn't – everyone's on the same level. Everyone puts themselves 100%. On the same level. So the ego for the most – you know, obviously everybody's
– in general.
Yes. Obviously
– I mean, that's the goal.
Some people can't always achieve that, but that's the goal. Where it's almost the exact opposite when you're dealing with a business situation. Everyone's jockeying for position in business situations.
So it is the same. It's just this – the same in, on the other end of the continuum.
And it is the exact.
Yeah.
It's almost like in business, it's about a show, a play, a competition. It is not about cooperation, loss of ego.
Take off your masks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, it's empowering. If you want to go hear wisdom, go to an open AA meeting. Simple. Sit around and open your ears and listen, man. It ain't nothing but wisdom. And what's cool is you get the newcomer we had a newcomer come in yesterday, first day in, he's shaking the whole time, wife's leaving him, like major shit going on in his life. And you go around the table and you're hearing everybody's experience, strength and hope, and it gets to him and he's just full of despair. And it's just like, well, he'll get there. If he keeps coming, man, keeps coming back. Like it just changes your life. Like you start to absorb everyone else's wisdom and you start practicing some of that stuff and it changes your life. And it's wisdom based, consistent application of knowledge.
I've said this before and I stand by it. There should be something like that for non-alcoholics. I'm sure there is, but there needs.
Yeah, there's tons of books out there that is all about trying to embed the 12 steps into just daily life.
Like, right, but I mean groups that meet and perform that ritual.
Ritual, yeah, I'm sure they exist.
It is like going to the gym.
Oh, 100%.
It is. And that's an amazing tool that you have. You can it has supercharged your life.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So anyway, I think about that. I go to the gym because it's a release for me. And I also think about my – I'm a lot, probably a little bit more aware of my physical health than most because of the health problems I've had in the past. And so for me, that's something that if I don't do it, I feel bad and I notice that I feel bad. So when I do it, I feel good. I feel better. I'm talking through this. I need another component like that. I need another –
I think everybody does. They're just an outlet to. So my question to you was going to be, what are your wisdom outlets? Yeah. I've got very specific ones.
Well, this is a huge
yeah,
one.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't yeah. even putting this yeah. in there. Great. This is a huge one. Nice. Yeah. What else? Like, do you have either people or what I call para, this is my term, parasocial mentors?
Well, yeah, you.
Books, authors.
Oh, parasocial. The journal that we do on a daily basis, the
Ryan Holiday
journal. Ryan Holiday has so I get daily Stoic emails.
You know, nice.
That have just, you know, some friendly reminder of, you know.
What about the traditional? Because a lot of people think wisdom, they think older man, older woman, conveying knowledge, sharing. Do you have anybody like that in your life? Like an actual person that you can go to and seek information from?
Not right now in a general perspective. What I would – you know, one of the funny things is that I think about who that has been in my life overall. Growing up, interestingly, when I was a kid, it was my dad and your dad.
Mm-hmm.
So
– right. Well, that obviously changes to at some – and that's degree, normal. But it doesn't have to change.
No?
You know, that's my ideal. Like I don't want that. I want to cultivate that throughout my life, because you know that's my main goal. I want my kids to be able to seek me out to try to get a little wisdom.
Well, and here's the other thing. I've had a rotating cast of mentors in varying aspects of my life. They've been coaches, they've been teachers, they've been, you know, superiors at work and career. And it's interesting. It's just like at some point in time, you, at least in my journey, have to become your own, you know what I mean? It's like at some point the apprentice has to become the master,
right?
You know, and I'm not saying that you have to be your own wisdom person, but it turns less into having a mentor who's above you guiding you and more into you managing your own wisdom and bouncing everything off of your peers, right? And so at this point in our lives, at least in my life, I have peers and I have acquaintances who I can gain pieces of wisdom from. I don't have a single.
Right.
Yeah.
I call it my wisdom bench. Like, you know, who's on the team kind of, so to speak.
Great.
And for me, those people change. Like I have different folks that I can turn to for specific areas. I don't have like a single Socrates or Albert Einstein that, you know, is all-encompassing wisdom.
Right.
But there are some people that can approach some of that, but still, I did, like I'm looking at a sheet right here. My mental model and heuristic sheet. What is this? Shortcuts to help make good decisions in life for big things that pop up. Where did I get this concept from? Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett's business partner. Have I ever met Charlie Munger? No, I have not, but I've read a lot about him and I respect a ton about him. Do I like everything he has to say? No, I think he's an idiot when it comes to cryptocurrency and he doesn't know it, but that's because he is who he is. So what did I do? I took his ideas and I formulated my own, what he calls lattice work, to throw your ideas for major decisions through your lattice work. And it has to come from a multidisciplinary perspective. That's how I like to think about wisdom. Take the thoughts and ideas and experiences of people you admire and put them through your own blender and grinder and make them your own. And I think people, if you just take somebody else's experience, suggestions, formula, prescriptions, and you just live by that, I don't know how good a wisdom that is. And the only one I can disagree on that is know thyself. I think that's a great prescription everybody should try to follow.
Okay, I agree with that. What I'll say to that is when you're doing that, right, when you're bouncing these things through your lattice work, what is your goal? What are you trying to achieve?
Make a good decision that works within my life.
Perfect. That's exactly what I was trying to get at. So I was going to say,
at least with this thing that we're talking
right,
about. Yeah.
Right. Well, and I was trying to boil it down to like, what is like, okay, great. So what is wisdom in action? Right. And I think it is better decisions. And what's the result of wisdom in action? I think it's better emotions.
Gets back to emotions, 100%. But I think there's a step prior that my next book is going to be all about. Prior to the decision, it's about choice identification. What are my choices? I think people limit the choices that they see because they put self-limiting beliefs on themselves. They, as you talked about my little path image behind you, they don't see all the other paths that do exist, but they're just choosing not to focus on them. So now the decision they make, it might still be a good one, but they haven't done as thorough of analysis or a deep of analysis as possible because they haven't seen the illumination of choice options.
Or in the worst case, any analysis, and yeah, they are reacting,
right,
not responding. Right?
Yeah.
Which is another key tenet that of wisdom, right? So I would add that to the whole know thyself piece, which is
here's some
recognizing when you have a catalyst for decision.
Yes.
And instead of just reacting, thinking
deliberately.
The
critical action piece. Yes. I don't like critical thinking because that leaves you in academia in a philosopher's chamber, which is fine if that's your job. But most people actually need to like take action. So I like critical action because critical thinking is part of that.
Yeah. You know, there's a part of this briefly. Oh, so, sorry, you had.
Well, to- I was going to. Can I throw out, because we've been at the high level a little bit, can we give some very concrete examples? And I've got one for you.
Certainly.
I think Dave brings some wisdom into the world, into the know thyself piece, at least in our little bubble enclave where we live. A lot of people have grass cutting services, myself included. Dave knows thyself. He enjoys cutting his lawn. He gets out there and puts on the podcasts and headphones, and he's talked about how he enjoys the fresh smell of cut grass, and it makes him think about being a kid. And that's time to himself. Like, he doesn't have to be, you know, to be honest, worrying about the kids or whatever. Like, cut the grass, and it looks good. It's a before and after. It's the paint the fence progress thing.
It is.
That's wisdom. That's wisdom. That's know thyself. Oh, David, you complain. You want more time? Nope, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'll still complain, but this gives me joy, peace, serenity. That's wisdom. And
thank you.
I have similar things, but I wanted to give you that. I thought that's good.
It's hilarious you mentioned that, because as I walked in, I saw your freshly cut grass and your sign there of the service that you use to cut it. And I was like, well, I guess I got to – I got to ask Zach, like, who does he use? How much is it? Because, again, you know, in the past, you've talked to me. You always complain about not having time. You should just use a service for your grass. Lauren is back on that with me. So hilarious.
Well, if you're doing that, then you're, you know, the more you complain about it, then you're wanting your cake and eating it both ways. But if you don't complain about the timepiece that often,
I don't think I've been complaining lately.
You never do to me.
Yeah.
So
anyway, that's a great one. That's a great example. I mean, with you, it's all about the. I don't have like such a specific example with you. Oh, well, I mean, I guess I do, right? Like the most obvious one, which is finally deciding to admit to yourself and confront your biggest weakness,
mm-hmm.
which was alcoholism.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's amazing. It has changed your life. You know what I mean? You want to talk about knowing thyself, right? Like, that's a hard one because it's probably something that you knew for a long time about yourself.
Probably since I was 17, 18.
But getting over the ego part of it, mm-hmm. right? And where you're justifying your actions, right?
The ego just like and just the future. An alcoholic always thinks they can beat the game. Eventually, I'll drink normally. And you've got these visions of your future life and my basement with my bar and I'm entertaining everyone. And, you know, it's just a false reality for an alcoholic.
Right. One of the things I'll say about you that I think is a compliment is a lot of the components of wisdom, I think, are in line with your personality. So conscientiousness, I think, is a part of wisdom because obviously if you're going to put other people at the center and get over yourself, you have to be conscientious of the broader situation and see the bigger picture. And that's something that I think you naturally have as a personality trait. Obviously, I see it in Claudia too.
Hmm.
And so I think that that's a serendipitous personality trait.
Well,
I
appreciate that. Let's go down that route a second. What about the old man or the old lady that's living true to themselves and who they are and the choices that they're making to many others just are very odd. Like a good example, maybe an older person at a family party chooses to wear a robe and socks with slippers, and or an older person chooses to, I don't know, not have the medical surgery they need just because that they feel that that's the grit they can exhibit. Or there's a lot of examples that we could use where they're not actually harming anyone else. They're right. not doing anything negative. They know thyself, and they just are like, fuck it. I don't care. Is that wisdom?
Yeah, it definitely. To me, there's definitely some wisdom there, right? Mm-hmm. I think that they have to. Here's the ultimate question: is it wisdom? Are they aware of the ramifications of their decisions, and are those ramifications something that they want?
Yeah.
A lot of times, I'll hear people in those situations say, "Oh, I want to do this and I don't care what people think. And so that's why I'm going to do it." But they don't really take stock of the image they're building and or the full ramifications of their choice to do this quirky behavior. And then they have problems with the people's reactions later where they had just verbally said, I don't care what people think, blah, blah, blah. But then in the end, they end up complaining about
psychologically. I personally believe, and I know there's science or social science out there backing this up. As soon as somebody out loud invokes that I don't care what people think, 100% they care what people think.
Yeah.
That they are rhetorically crafting a specific image. They are obviously thinking about that because they said it out loud.
Right.
That's a lie.
Right. Where I would say this, I'd say, you know, there's the whole getting over what other people think thing. There's two paths to it. One is just completely being oblivious, right?
Yes, no conscientiousness. And that's kind of where this came from.
Right.
And that can be both good and bad.
Right.
Ignorance is bliss. The other side is doing what you want, maximizing your emotions and decisions at the expense of others.
Right.
So in the two examples I gave, the one about dress, obviously that doesn't affect anyone other than just maybe being a little embarrassed publicly, being around somebody that makes dresses odd.
Right.
But the second one, the medical one, there are real ramifications for that because not taking care of yourself medically when you are able to, if you have a family around you, now they have a responsibility to do so, and that is real impact there. And then it can also bump up against your values and how you want to live your life. I believe you got to keep yourself at peak performance, so to speak, in order to be that shining light for others. And if you're not doing that for yourself, you can't do the things for others as well as you'd like to do it.
100%. I think that's part of the seeing the big picture of the truly being conscientious, because
interesting.
Somebody who chooses not to have a medical procedure has to recognize that some part of that is selfish, especially if they have some sort of if others depend on them.
Yeah. And let me clarify. I'm not talking like cancer.
Right.
Like that's different. You get to towards end of life. I'm going to die or not. Absolutely. You choose what you want to do with your life. I'm talking you're still working,
right.
You injure your knee or your hips going out, and you decide, I'm just going to limp around the rest of my life.
Right. Right.
And then complain about it.
Right. Well, then it inevitably comes to a head in some sort of a debilitating situation, and then you're unable to fulfill your responsibilities.
And it leads to all other issues.
So in that way, there is a lack of wisdom.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, yeah.
But here's interesting. So, like, we're pretty reflective. We do this podcast. We like to think, and not just philosophically, but we try to be concrete, consistent application of our values as much as possible. Dude, when we're in our 50s and 60s and 70s and hopefully 80s, I'm living to 111, so I don't know where you're going to. But when we're there, maybe the singularity happens and we'll take our consciousness and it'll live forever. But when we're old as fuck, what are our kids going to look at us and be like, oh, God, they're doing this. This is how that – because obviously that's going to happen. And I can't pick anything out. Like that's where my ego's at this point. I'm like
– well, it's just a – I think
we got to get old first,
no,
I guess.
No, I think that's more on them than it's on us.
But this is the thought experiment.
Yeah,
this
so
is,
I think –
because like right now I'm like, well, I don't know what they can say.
Well, I mean, what age are you talking about?
Let's go right? 70s.
Okay. So how old are our kids and when are our 70s? Let's think about that. They're 30.
They're 40.
Damn.
Claudia's 40. Ben's 37. 36.
Oh, man. By that time, I think they'll be much more tolerant of us. I think of...
So there's your hole.
Yeah, exactly.
There's Dave's gap.
Exactly.
Mine is... Oh, they'll just come to me for all their decisions to help out. There's my gap.
Hilarious. Yeah, no, I... I do fully anticipate that at about 14, and it might happen earlier, but that's when they're going to like really be annoyed with everything.
Start seeing our flaws rather than think we're the smartest, strongest, coolest people ever. Yeah. And we're at the stage where our kids still like us.
I know. We got to hold on to that stage.
But there's real wisdom there.
Yeah.
Like, I believe what Stoicism, or Ryan Holiday specifically in The Daily Dad, has given me one of the things. Man, you only have so much time where your kids actually like you. Of course, they'll always love you, hopefully. But like you and want you around and think you're cool.
Right.
Right? They think we're cool. Like, how silly is that? I don't even think I'm cool anymore. Honestly, I don't. I'm not cool anymore.
I wouldn't hang out with myself.
and it's just like, wow. So we've got a couple more years to ride that wave. To me, that's wisdom.
It is.
We've seen that. We know. And we try to create as many opportunities as possible. I passed on a work engagement the other day. Why? Because I'd missed Ben's baseball game. I didn't even think there was no sweat, and I didn't even care how much I'd been. Nope, got in a prior engagement.
So good. And you know, I'll say this. If we're truly going to be wise, even when we think our kids are in the most ridiculous state of being critical about us, like, we'll have to at least consider what they're saying. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I think about those stages when I was being ridiculous and, downing my parents for whatever. And they would always they completely ignore it. Like, you know, there was zero chance in their mind that anything that I had talked about had any truth to it. Where I know, like, Marin and Dylan will probably say some things that are over the top, we'll say. But I bet you they'll have a seed of truth to them. You
right,
know
but
I mean?
That's the point of Life Lab. We have to be open to learning from others at all times. And then they need to be open to lively debate, or as you coined the phrase last week, which I really think you should trademark, violent agreement. but that's an important piece. The other thing is that it's not like can you just have wisdom? Is it just like you have it and then you've got it forever?
No, that's right. That whole,
it comes and goes.
That's that whole practice thing that we talked about. And I'll just say, I'm not the one who made up violent agreement. I heard that somewhere.
Oh, okay. Well, still.
I wish. but it's a practice. It's totally a practice. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to say that earlier that we never got back to, thinking about practice, right, is one of the episodes that we did was on character and how people sometimes almost play a role of what they think that they're expected to do in certain situations. And I think that is a way of getting out of practice with wisdom, right? Is to think of yourself as, well, I'm XYZ, therefore that this is my reaction, this is my response, based on what they've seen other people in that situation do, read about in the past, internalized. They've built this image of others and themselves by virtue of their position in either career or family or whatever organization, their community. And so therefore they let that color their choices and their decision. So it's almost the exact opposite of what you were talking about when you were saying, what about people who just behave in some quirky way and they say they, you know, don't care? And I'm like, well, if they really understand the ramifications of their actions and they choose to move forward anyway, likely without verbalizing, I don't care what people think of me, then yes, that is true wisdom. And I would say the opposite side of the spectrum of that to me is someone who lets their character that they've built, their self-image, determine their reactions and responses and choices, the choices that they see. And I think that's something that people can do unconsciously or subconsciously. It goes all the way down to the way you dress, right? And so they've shown that behavior and feelings can be impacted by the dress the outfit that you choose on a daily basis. And so I think the only reason I bring that up is not to talk about dressing and outfits, but it is to strengthen the argument that I have about the character that you choose to play at any one period in time can color your thoughts, reactions, experiences, and emotions. And I think that that is a lack of wisdom.
Yeah. You can go deep on character, and we had an episode on that. So like you're talking about the performative character, because there's also the foundational character, the traits that build character.
Right.
But you're talking about like more mask wearing, performative.
Exactly. Gotcha. And even when people are like, I'm taking off the mask, I'm being my true self.
That can also be a performance in and of itself.
100%. I mean, you build up this expectations of yourself. It's like the whole self-limiting beliefs, right? So there's another term for it. If you take out the word self-limiting beliefs, you could say self-directing beliefs, right? Like, I believe this about myself. This
well,
is
you
the
can create a self-fulfilling prophecy in a positive way too. By that,
yeah.
Create a belief that you eventually actually believe that leads your life in a positive direction.
That's true. So those can be good or bad.
Yes.
Depending on how you use them. Yeah.
Well, here's a phrase that I think about, and you tell me. I think a person that exhibits wisdom, here's a thought. I don't think anybody has wisdom at all times in all aspects of their life.
Yes.
So I'll say that. Two, I think people who do exhibit this spiritual-like quality of wisdom many times or at many areas of their life, they do this phrase. Self-inspection, self-correction.
Yeah.
And not only self-inspection, self-correction, they will pull other people into that and seek feedback from, what do you think? Am I, how is this going? Is this good? What should I do different? And then the key thing is take action on these. They embody the life lab experiment with life, like self-inspect, self-correct, fold others into that, keep trying to improve. To me, that's wisdom.
I love it. Let me.
We could have changed our fucking tagline to be like Life Lab, the wisdom providers.
The wisdom. This is get. Listen to this if you want wisdom.
Get your dose of wisdom.
So here, let me ask one more question. I think this is probably a good one for me to wrap up with. What's the difference between wisdom and enlightenment? So I just listened to this Buddhist story, and let me relay it in a very shortened format. It was about these monks were in a monastery, and this one monk. Was given a menial task to pound the rice for the rest of the monks. And the leader told him, don't do anything else. You don't have to meditate. You don't have to do anything else. Just pound this rice in this room. And there was a lot of monks, so he ended up doing that like 12 hours a day. That's what he did. All the other monks looked down on him, and they thought that he was, you know, a simpleton and didn't know how to actually practice Buddhism correctly. And then there was, you know, this, the head monk was going to retire. And so he basically put out a question, like, if anybody knows what enlightenment is, you know, write it on my door and that person will be the next leader. Okay. Somebody wrote, you know, enlightenment is, constantly looking at the mirror of oneself, seeing the dust and cleaning it repetitively and making sure that you get, the leader was like, well, that's obviously not right, you know. And then some mysterious person, you know, just kind of like the Goodwill Hunting scene.
I was just going to say the Matt Damon
yes.
rice
yes.
pounding.
Yes, yeah, exactly. The janitor in Goodwill Hunting is this guy who did the rice pounding. And he wrote on the door, like, there is no mirror. Like, and that was it. That was the enlightenment piece, right? There is no mirror. There is no self. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no dust for it to fall upon. And he's like, oh, you understand, you know, go start your own monastery now, you know. So that was a story I read. Now, if you ask a real Buddhist, is that story accurate of what Buddhists think of enlightenment? I don't know, right? And I'm like, what is the true lesson of it? I don't know. But we talked about the ability to remove thyself, to know yourself and get over your ego, decenter mm-hmm. yourself mm-hmm. from any situation. And so I think if that's a core tenet of what we're talking about, then. Okay, great. Here's my question when it comes to enlightenment. Oftentimes when I've felt enlightened, it's been a sense of pure, like, bliss and understanding that nothing really matters anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There is no worry. There right. is no – and so when we talk about wisdom, we're still keeping the baggage of this world firmly in the picture, and we're talking about – responsibilities to others and making sure that you act in alignment with others and helping others and being positive and a positive force and yada, yada, yada. So what's the difference between wisdom and enlightenment?
I think they're very similar. Again, they're both – there is no person that's just enlightened at all times. And anyone that thinks there are, if you talk to that person, they would say, no, I'm not. And then by them saying that, you'd be like, yes, you are because you said that. I think the same thing for wisdom. they're both that feeling of euphoria, the feeling of connection and understanding, the feeling that you know very little in the universe. All you have to do is go look outside, look up instead of down, and that will right size you and give you a sense of what you think your ego is in this universe. And wise people or enlightened people do that. It's about, you said, decentering the self. I'd say it's just putting the self in the background and not in the foreground based on the whole freaking universe around you. For me, wisdom and enlightenment boil down to the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Wise people and enlightened people know that there's things, most things, they can't change. They can make zero impact on. The courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So a wise or enlightened person knows their circle of control, where they can make an impact, where their emotions are positive. They know when to struggle to try to make larger change or bigger things, and they know when to recognize the difference. And that's wisdom.
That's good.
And that comes from practice. And there's enlightenment entangled in there, I believe. But to me, they're very similar.
Okay.
It's more of like, almost it's like an Eastern versus Western way of talking
about
the same
thing. Yeah, okay. I like that. I like that. If I were to answer that, so I love everything you said, obviously by my positive response. If I were to answer that, I think what I would say is, if you get to the pinnacle of either, to me, you arrive at an understanding that we are one. And I truly believe that in my core. So why would you practice wisdom and conscientiousness and, you know, loss of self and putting others before you and all that stuff? Like, if you truly understand that we are one, which I do believe, you know, in its truest sense, which is, I think, a hard concept to grasp, all that just comes naturally. All that just comes naturally. So anyway, that's my answer.
No, I think it's good. I also believe, though, that you said when people get to that pinnacle, I don't think that that's a place that people get and there's homeostasis there.
No.
Oh, okay, cool.
No, I think part of the nature of this world is not being able to sustain that. I think it's the natural state of things is desire and struggle and all the things that we deal with on a daily basis that we're trying to get over by talking about all the things we talk about on Life Lab. I think that's just the natural human condition. Whenever you are able to, for just a fleeting moment, you know, break free of that and achieve that bliss, that enlightenment, that's a fleeting thing, you know. But trying to at least remember it and build it into your lattice of wisdom. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's key. Yeah.
Well, nice. I only have one other quote I'll share, and then I'm ready for change challenges unless you have something else you'd like to get into. I like this quote. It comes from a guy I really like and admire. And I think there's wisdom in admiring and learning from people, even though you don't admire everything about that person. And this person's name was Hunter Thompson. And it was just definitely lived his life according to who he was and his values, which was a huge strain. He was a horrible father and not a very good friend. But if you were able to run around with him, you sure had a lot of interesting stories. And he lived according to his own value set. But he has a lot of wonderful quotes because he was a great writer. But he said, "He who is taught only by himself has a fool for a master." That is wisdom, folks. You can soak up wisdom. You can learn different ways of living, different ways of approaching things from all around you. But it's up to you to take consistent action on those things, to learn from your scars, to reflect on the failures and the experiences, not only of yourself, but of those around you. So my first change challenge is create a wisdom board of directors. Create a wisdom list. I have a list of what I call life advisors, and these are people that I think have wisdom in different areas that I believe are important to me. And so I will seek out their input on certain things in my life. But I would not go to certain people on this with questions outside of the areas that I deem their expertise or areas of wisdom. And so create a list of people, and you don't have to know them, but it'd be better if you do. But, where you can soak up some of this life knowledge to help start applying principles that you think are important to you. So that's my change challenge.
That's a great one. My change challenge will be this. And this relies on you having a difficult experience. So the next time, everybody's having those all the time. The next time that you have a difficult, pick out a difficult experience or a difficult situation that you are experiencing now. And do two things. Number one, reflect upon it and journal about it, about the situation. All aspects, the way that you feel, you know, the situation itself, whatever. And really just try to get yourself a big picture understanding of it. And then the final piece of this is write about it from the perspective of the serenity prayer that Zach just talked about. So write in this situation, what are the things I can control? What are the things that I cannot control? And then build out your list of choices that you can see based upon the journaling of the situation and the understanding of the things you can and cannot control. And then choose the path that you are going to move forward with the understanding that some of the things you can control, some of the things you can't, and you may or may not be able to determine the outcome. But the outcome shouldn't, you know, not be the thing that determines your positive or negative emotion. Your reflections and actions.
The process.
The process. The obstacle is the way.
Right? The obstacle is the way. I'll take it back to Charlie Munger, since I got his lattice work and my lattice work.
And the reason I give that change challenge is I think it involves a bunch of stuff that we talked about from wisdom.
Oh, it's fantastic change challenge. Yeah. To me, it's about building a process to lead to wisdom. So Munger says life is process, not just profits. We live in the process, so you got to enjoy the process more than the profits.
Great.
Well, this was a fun one. Lots of wisdom that we stole and shared from others, and hopefully you can find and create some on your own and share it with the people you love. So thanks for listening today to Wisdom, and as we say at Life Lab, experiment with life.